Good morning, everyone. Good morning. Good evening, everyone. All right, we're going to start our regular business meeting or our budget hearing on the 2019-20 budget. We're going to do this after roll call. Should we do? Okay, we're going to do roll call first.
Vice President Chung?
Here.
Member Fay?
Here.
Member Kobus?
Here.
Member May? Member McCluskey?
Here.
Member Rotroff?
Here.
President Kowalczyk?
Here.
Good evening. Tonight is the it's the public hearing for the fiscal year 2020 budget. You have a full copy of the exhibits in your packet. I'm going to go through the PowerPoint, and then we'll have time for any questions from the board or any public comments. Okay. The budget is a policy document. It's one of the most important responsibilities you do as Board of Education members. It is a projection of both revenues and expenditures, and it is ever-changing. Up here, you take a look at the budget calendar, which is a process. Process takes almost an entire year, beginning with financial projections in the fall, passing the tax levy. From there, the student fees are presented, discussed, and approved. The staffing plan is created. From there, then, I sit down with the central office and building administrators to develop the preliminary budgets. In the summer, budget assumptions and financial projections are presented again to the board. Last month, we went through the tentative budget, which the board approved. All of the proper filing was created, published in the newspaper. It's been on public display for the last 30 days, and we're here tonight to present, discuss, and adopt the budget. The strategic plan is the driving force behind the budget. The budget's a moral document which shows the district's strengths and everything that we're hoping to achieve and using financial means to be able to support that. Just want to touch on really quickly a few of the instructional initiatives for 2019-2020. These initiatives are supported by this budget. Many of you know that we are implementing a new district-wide writing curriculum. There's a lot of time and effort with teachers, staff members, professional development, bringing speakers in, having some coaches, and really we'll be refining those practices and those writers' workshop throughout the school year. In addition to that, we're going to be expanding the use of restorative practices related to social-emotional learning. That not only happens at the district level, but is happening at all of our buildings. On looking at assessments, the former Ames Web is no longer being utilized and has been replaced by FastBridge. A much better opportunity to assess where students are and where their learning is. And then finally, implementing one-to-one technology at the fifth grade level. We implemented one-to-one beginning in seventh and eighth grade a few years ago, then moved it down to sixth grade, and now after our pilot program last year, we are now implementing it in fifth grade also. There are a few changes from the tentative budget that I felt it's always important to highlight that. Every year, we try to get as close as we can with the actual staff members, salaries and benefits. So any new members that have been hired since early August now reflect the actual salaries and actual benefits as opposed to the tentative budget. Good news related to the corporate taxes in Illinois and corporate property replacement tax. Those tax receipts came in higher than they have in recent years. So in the fall, we tentative project a little more than $410,000. Most recent figures from the comptroller's office show approximately $537,000. So that's a pretty decent amount of increase on the revenue side. As far as the FTEs, since the tentative budget, there was one increase, a SOAR instructional assistant over at Lyons Park. And then, as always, special education programs are very fluid. And we had individuals that were beginning at either regular schools, schools in-house, or NSSEO programs that are now being outplaced to private facilities and an SSEO program on a part-time or full-time basis. With that, on the revenue side, compared to the last few years, the breakdown is very similar. 90% of our funds come from local sources, mainly property taxes, but also any type of fees that are collected through registration. 7% being the state side, and almost entirely coming from the new evidence-based funding formula, and then 3% coming from federal sources. On the expenditure side, when you break it down by function, almost entirely based on instruction and supporting services to support the educational environment. Outside of that, the other 5% makes up community services, which in our district is Kids Corner, payments to local governments or governmental units, which is NSSEO, and then things related to debt service, which is mainly our bond and interest payments. When you look at the expenditures in a different way, broken down by object, almost 70% make up salaries and benefits. We're a people business, and our teachers and our staff members to be able to teach for our students makes up a majority of our costs. Outside of that, almost 9% is purchase services, 13% is capital outlay, which includes construction and capital expenditures. This comes directly from the budget sheet, which breaks down by not only total revenues and expenditures, the sources that I just talked about, local, state, and federal, instruction, support, and community, but also takes a look at the beginning fund balance and ending fund balances in those funds. I'm very proud to stand up here and say for the second consecutive year, we have a true balanced budget where we have revenues over expenditures, and we're not utilizing fund balance to balance the budget. Very happy to stand up here and say that again. Looking ahead towards this budget and part of the summer, once again, we have $4 million set aside for capital projects and construction. Some of the big things that we'll be looking at, which I discussed briefly at the last meeting, is rebuilding and possibly expanding the parking lot here at Fairview. Rebuilding and expanding the parking lot over at Lyons Park School. We've talked about that in the past, especially with the acquisition of the house on Mailing. We're able now to utilize some space and be able to create a design where we can assist with pickup and drop off, try to alleviate some of that traffic on Council Trail, similar to what we have over here at Fairview. The three-year lease and the mobile classrooms over at Westbrook will be ending this year, and making a strong recommendation because we've utilized that space. We needed that space. We want to be able to purchase those classrooms so that we could continue to use that space. And then these projects will be discussed in depth in addition to other projects at the October Board of Education meeting. Some future financial challenges here locally, which we've discussed before and will continue to discuss. Aging building, Lincoln Middle School, the elephant in the room, is how are we going to approach Lincoln as we move forward? We'll be talking about putting together a community survey that's going to be going out in the next few weeks, and that will be a part of the questionnaire is trying to gauge the community to see, where are our next steps going to be with that building.
In addition to the age, we also have space issues at Lincoln. And while being a middle school and students switch classes gives us some flexibility, still the school was not designed for the number of students that currently occupy the building and the number of students that are moving up and down the hallway, especially in the 300, 400 wing, is rather crowded. I mentioned about Westbrook with the mobile classrooms. Those mobile classrooms and purchasing them help alleviate space, but there still is space issues over at Westbrook. And then also something that we will be monitoring is increasing enrollment at Lyons Park and seeing when it is time to do a Lyons Park expansion. Dr. Allmiller will be talking a little bit later about the enrollment and enrollment report in a little bit more detail, but that's just something that we will always be keeping an eye on. As far as the other unknowns when it comes to legislative, I've been doing this for 8 years now, and every single time we, you know, feel it's important just to keep these in the back of our mind. General Assembly, you never know what's going to happen. We've talked about TRS, cost shift, whether it's going to happen, it won't happen, it's phased in. That's something that's always on the table, similar to property tax freezes, and whether that's a true freeze, partial freeze, a holiday, so to speak. That's something, you know, in the veto session, I'm sure these scenarios will come up and will be discussed. Whether they take place, you know, no one knows, but it's always something that we want to keep in mind. So with that, I will open the floor for questions.
Jen.
Thanks. So Adam, couple questions. One on the construction projects that you mentioned. I know we're gonna cover that in October, so we'll get more details on the mobile classrooms, I assume, in October.
Yes.
Okay, and I assume we're looking at because obviously we knew we had the opportunity. I believe we were leasing maybe initially, and we thought we would have the opportunity to purchase them. But do they have the flexibility if we need to move them somewhere else? Just as long, I know we're going to be covering, and you mentioned about the space at Westbrook, et cetera, but I just want to make sure that if we're going to invest in something like that, whatever the cost might be, that we're able to either move it, or if we feel like in 2 years we're going to do something different at Westbrook, that we're not wasting what we're spending on.
Definitely, and with that being in mind, I think there was quite a bit of money put into the construction of the utilities, bringing those things out to the mobile classrooms and the canopy of where they are. It was also designed with the idea of an expansion of Westbrook being part of the plan. So most likely, those mobiles would stay exactly where they are right now. And any kind of expansion would take place behind the building where it would not interfere with where the mobiles are. So we've already worked with going back almost 3 years ago now, we met with the architect and talked about this planning stage at that time, not knowing where enrollment was going to go. We already had this idea in mind that an expansion eventually could take place in the back, so it would not negatively impact where the mobiles are.
Okay. And then my second question was, you mentioned about the community survey regarding some of the future financial challenges. I don't know if this would be for you, Adam, but are we doing a community engagement coming up? And, you know, in the past we've done a couple a year, and should it be tied to that survey, or would that be a great forum topic in addition to the survey? I'm not sure what anyone thinks about that, but.
Do you want to do a community engagement? Well, this is about the budget, so we'll talk about community engagement.
Yeah.
But if you're thinking about doing it before the survey is put out there or after it's put out?
Well, I guess I just think that we always have a risk with a survey that non-parents don't necessarily fill it out. So to try to get the entire community to weigh in on the future would be just a great way to put them both together somehow. I'm not, you know, I know we have at times participation struggles at those community engagements, but it might be an opportunity.
Okay.
So.
All right, we'll talk about that at a later time. Anybody else have questions about the budget?
Thank you so much, Adam. I had two quick things. First, on that, not this slide, but the one that was just previous, that future financial challenges, I noticed that our poor fifth wheel admin building is not on here. Mm-hmm. So I don't know if that means that there are not, at this moment, significant I don't know, obstacles or, you know, construction needs, or if, you know, I know that a lot of times the admin building kind of gets pushed to last place. I wasn't sure why.
No. We have, from last summer to this summer, and a big part of it is the employee that we hired that was doing a lot of the work, we've made some tremendous strides in what the administration building looked like a year ago to what it did now. By redoing the HVAC in the building, it has helped the airflow, air conditioning, heating tremendously. I definitely have a project or two in mind that we would be hopefully embarking on in October, but as far as the state of the admin building being a serious concern a year ago versus where we are now, I feel much better about where the administration building is. So it's not forgotten in any means, it's just in a much different place compared to where it was a year ago. And for any of you who have, when we've gone over for meetings there and have seen the transformation, with most of it being in-house personnel, we've really done a really good job with that.
Good, that's great to hear. My other is just a comment that you already mentioned, but I really think it bears repeating and emphasizing that, you know, this is the second year that we are having this balanced budget. And I'm sure everyone in this room remembers that prior to the referendum, we had several years of a deficit budget. And I think around the time of the referendum, we had some community members, you know, and I understand they had legitimate concerns, but they were just worried that even after a successful referendum, would the district continue to, you know, spend more than our revenue and eat away at our reserves? And I think, you know, our administration has done such a wonderful job answering that question. And the answer is, you know, no, we have had 2 years of a balanced budget. And I think that's a wonderful accomplishment for Dr. Allmiller and for you. So,
thank you. Yeah.
I had one quick question on that corporate, the CPPRT. Mm-hmm. Last year, didn't we have to pay back, or did some?
There was a state miscalculation several years ago, where they were supposed to, they paid too much out to districts.
Okay.
So what they did is they prorated a portion of that.
Okay.
Where that was going back, I believe that was 16-17.
Okay.
So.
And so everything's all good with that, and now they've projected more.
The based on what happened, you know, over the past up until, let's say, you know, May or so, the economy was continuing to boom, so the corporations were making more profits, and therefore the receipts that were coming in were much higher than projected from the previous year.
Okay. And does anybody else have any questions? There's any comments from the community? Okay. All right, thank you, Adam.
Thank you.
Okay, and we're going to close the public hearing and resume our regular business meeting. All right, are there any board reports? NSSEO, since Brian's not here, but do we have any PTO Ed Foundation? Vicki?
Ed Foundation report. So their last meeting was Wednesday, September 11th. First, their fall grant cycle is currently underway. So the foundation has about $20,000 available for grants. One update, I'm not sure if you remember, but there was a discussion a few months ago about possibly moving from 2 grant cycles per year to just one. However, at the meeting, they officially decided to keep it to 2 grant cycles per year. Also, the Ed Foundation received $15,000 from Bosch to fund STEAM-related projects. So those funds will be added to the 2 grant cycles this year. And so in terms of the timeline, this week, grant applications were distributed to the school principals. The applications are due on November 1st, and then the Ed Foundation members will review and vote on the applications at their November 13 meeting. And then lastly, just as a reminder, their upcoming fall event is coming up on Friday, October 18. 8 to 11 at Station 34. So tickets are $35 each, and their price goes up to $40 each after October 10th, and last year did sell out, so I encourage everyone to go online and buy your tickets, and their next meeting is Wednesday, October 9 at Westbrook.
Thank you very much. Does anybody have any PTO meeting? Go ahead.
So Lincoln held their first meeting of the year, and Actually, it was an interesting event because the PTO there was actually at risk of going away after this year because there was a lack of participation from the community. And, you know, with a coordinated effort of the PTO and Paul Siminski, there was actually an overwhelming response where there's actually enough officers for not only this year, but a queue of people up for next year as well as for committees. So all the offices were filled up with backups as well as all the committees were filled up. So we went from a significant risk to, you know, people realizing what a benefit it was to the school. And so it was great to see. It was actually a really good meeting and just great to see that the organization's going to live on there and have plenty of support for the next couple of years.
Yes, kudos to Paul and to Robin, Jerry's wife, because the two of them headed that up and they did a great job. Does anybody else have another PTO?
So I attended the first Westbrook PTO meeting of the year, which was held on Wednesday, September 18th. They have many new committee leaders. So many of them were there, and it was kind of a good chance for introductions and basic information about what they were planning for the year. The big fundraiser, the Walk for Westbrook, is coming up on October 3rd with the rain date of October 4th. And the theme this year is around the world, and they have some really fun stations planned for the kids. So I hope it's a big success.
I had the privilege of attending the Fairview PTO meeting, which was held on Tuesday, September 10th. And they have some new officers in the PTO as well who are second grade parents that are coming over from Westbrook. Some of the things that were discussed at that meeting were the successful back to school picnic, which sounded like a really great opportunity for new families and parents to kind of get acquainted with each other and with the school. They have their No Stress fundraiser coming up, which, from what I understood, will be kind of the primary source of revenue for the year. They also have a dine-and-share opportunity at Five Guys. I believe that's the Randhurst location on Saturday, October 16th. And the next meeting is going to take place on Tuesday, October 8th at 5 p.m. in the Teacher's Lounge here at Fairview.
So I attended the Lions Park PTO. Their last meeting was Monday, September 9. So at that meeting, Mrs. Kelly mentioned that they were off to a great start this year. The first couple of weeks were spent reviewing expectations with the students and practicing for safety events like fire drills. Also, most of the fall benchmarking had been completed at the time of that meeting. So teachers and staff were planning to review the data today and tomorrow during their day-to-days to help set grade level goals as well as identify students who might need additional support services or enrichment. Mrs. Kelly also mentioned that one of their biggest challenges at the moment was dealing with their traffic situation. So they were running into issues at both pickup and drop-off, and unfortunately a big part of the problem was the parents not being respectful. So parking, either blocking people's driveways or parking in handicapped spots while they were waiting for their kids. So the school was continuing to work with parents to try to ease frustrations and make sure everyone was following the law. And also I wanted to share that our state Senator Ann Gillespie and our state Representative Mark Walker visited Lions Park on Friday, September 20th. So that was an effort by the PTO Civic Engagement Committee to give students a unique perspective on our state government. So Senator Gillespie and Representative Walker began their visit by helping to say the Pledge of Allegiance with some students. Then they visited each of the fourth grade classrooms where they introduced themselves and shared a little bit about what they did and then mostly just answered students' questions. I want to thank Dr. Allmiller for attending their visit, and the PTO's next meeting is Monday, October 7th.
Thank you very much. I originally didn't have a board president report, but just a simple quick thing. October 17th, before our next board meeting, we're going to have a walkthrough, an open house per se, of Fairview to show the community what the addition looks like with the new classrooms and the multi-purpose room. And I had gotten a lot of people who are prospect parents now, and they used to be Fairview, and like, what does it look like? I would love to go and see it. So thank you to Dr. Allmiller, Mr. Ofis, Adam, everybody, you know, they got it worked together, and we're going to do that from 6:15 to just before the board meeting on October 17th. And stuff will go out on social media and stuff regarding that. So that should be great. All right, next we're going to start up with staff reports. Fairview, our school improvement plan.
Well, good evening, everyone, and thank you for giving us the opportunity to share about our Fairview School Improvement Plan this evening. We have a lot of exciting things to share, but before we dive into that, I want to introduce some of the staff members who are with us tonight. So staff, when I say your name, please give a little wave. By the way, this is such a great group of educators, very creative, hardworking bunch, and just being here tonight just shows their dedication. So thanks to each of you for being here. So we have Jessica Moffitt, EL teacher, Kathy Machino, third grade teacher, Amanda Spenner, fifth grade teacher, Jamie Terrell, special education teacher, Ashley Patla, instructional technology coach, and Una Durkin, assistant principal. And they're all serving as members of the building leadership team this school year. So our goals for tonight's presentation are really twofold. First, we want to provide an overview of the goals that we have established as a school to help our school move forward this school year. And when we talk about school improvement goals for years, that the years that I've been here, it's really falls under two categories. The first one's all about academic success and growth, and the second one is about character development. The second goal we have for you is to explain the action plans and the activities that we are going to do to help meet those goals. And that's really what a school improvement plan is all about, you know, to set your goals and then figure out how you're going to reach those goals. So we're going to give you an overview tonight. The reason why this is important for you as a board is that when you understand what's going on in the schools, you're going to help serve us in better ways. And as you make decisions, and you make so many important decisions every year, it's so important to know what's going on in the school. So I applaud you as a board for caring about our school improvement plan, and we thank you for taking the time to learn about our plan and all of the school's plans over the course of the years. So success criteria, if by the end of our time together you have a solid understanding of how we plan to help students grow both academically and in character, then we as a team know that we've been successful. And the reason we talk about goals and why it's important to learn it and this success criteria is that's modeling good teaching. And we know with our students, when you give students the opportunity to know what they're learning, why they're learning it, and how they'll know they'll learned it, they just have greater success. And so you're the learners tonight, and we wanted to put you in a spot where you could have that success. So our first goal here is all about student growth, and it's to achieve optimal student growth in reading as measured by reading and math as measured by the MAP assessment. And the goal, the objective, is that Fairview students will meet or exceed a school-wide median growth percentile between 55% and 60% for both reading and math. Also, Fairview students will meet or exceed a median status percentile between 70% and 80% for reading and math to measure student achievement. And just to give you a little bit of an idea as to what this means, students take the MAP assessment every fall, and then they take it again in the spring. And when they take the score, the test in the fall, they get a score. So let's suppose a student scores a 226 on the math assessment as a fifth grader. That student is then given a growth target. And if that student meets their growth target, that means they have a growth percentile of 50%. And that's because NWEA, that's the group that puts this assessment together, they create growth targets based on the average amount of growth a fifth grader who scores 226 will achieve by the end of the year. So if they hit their growth target right on the dot, the growth percentile is 50. If they exceed that measure, if they go higher than their growth target, so the growth target for a 226 would be a 237, for example. If they go beyond that, then the percentile is something above 50. If they don't quite hit it, they might get close, but they don't hit it, then their growth percentile is below 50. So what we do is we take all of those growth percentiles across the entire student body, and we take the median. And if the median is between 55 and 60, then we know we've met our goal in terms of growth. It's a bit confusing because when you see 55 to 60%, you might think of percentiles, and that seems like a very mediocre goal, but that's not how it's measured. That's why I wanted to give you some of that background. For status percentile, it is kind of what you would think. We are looking to have a status percentile between 70 and 80%. So when students get a score in the spring, it's matched up with a national percentile. And if you took a median of all the students, we want our median to be between the 70 and 80th percentile. So put another way, we're aiming for over half of our students to be scoring at the 70th percentile or higher. So it's basically like taking the bell curve and shifting it so that 70 to 80 is the center as opposed to 50. So this is a rigorous goal, and we feel like we've got some good activities that are going to help get us there. So I do want to mention that this does link to our strategic plan, district strategic plan, key success factors number one, which is outstanding student performance, number two, coherent and rigorous programs, and number three, highly qualified staff. So this is the first goal, and we have staff members who are going to share our activities, and we'll start with Jessica Moffitt talking about our first activity.
So our first activity is with our adoption of our new writing curriculum, Lucy Calkins, Units of Study. The Fairview staff will participate in professional development designed by the district. So in addition, staff will be given time during team meetings to be able to collaborate about the progress with the program. So next month, we have some trainers that are coming to meet with each grade level, and they'll meet with the team for an hour and then go into, for example, the fourth grade class, and they're going to teach the lesson for us, to model that for us, and then have some time to debrief afterwards with the grade level to be able to provide some professional development for us here. In grade levels, if they want to have some time to meet as a team to be able to do some of their planning together, that's also provided for us. And we have some summer PD that happened before the school year started when we were able to get our manuals and read them over and work with the trainers as well as far as how to work through those manuals and how to plan and prepare these lessons for our students and really what to prioritize with this first year that we're using the curriculum. And so here we have some examples in a second grade classroom. So the picture on the left, the students are making connections. They have a magnifying glass and they're looking at a shell to see the little details that they can find in the shells. And then the mini lesson was then focusing on adding little details to your writing by using that connection with the seashell. And this program is also very heavily into using mentor text. And so the teachers will read the mentor text as a part of the lesson as well to look at, for example, they were looking for ways that this author used details in their mentor text so that students can then apply that to their writing time. So then the majority of their writing block is that picture there that you see on the right, where then students are able to go back to their writing and they could start a new writing or they could pick one that they started the other day to specifically work on that skill. So here they are writing new stories or pulling out old stories and going and adding in more details into their writing. And then the teachers in the room with the classroom teacher, if there's any special ed teachers or EL teachers, we're able to walk around then in conference with the students to see who's doing well with adding details and who needs more support in adding those details into their writing. So here's an example of a student writing sample from the beginning of the year here on the right side.
Great, thank you, Jessica. And next is Kathy to talk about personalized learning.
Hi, good evening. I'm very happy to discuss a project that's near and dear to my heart. It's called Personalized Learning. It's part of our goal number one. It's called activity number two. I'll go ahead and read through. You can follow along if you feel free to do so. To increase student motivation, ownership, and application of Common Core standards, personalized learning will continue at Fairview School. All classroom teachers implemented the personalized learning with their students during the 2018-2019 school year. This year, as we move this initiative forward, our goal is going to be to continue into the 2019-2020 school year But we're going to be creating a scope and sequence across all the four grade levels. It's going to help document how this experience progresses through from second grade through fifth grade. There's going to be a committee established where there's going to be one teacher per grade level, a special education teacher, the instructional technology coach, and the principal. We're all going to meet together and establish the grade level expectations and then streamline the process. Just a little bit of history here. We've been doing personalized learning now for a couple of years. So if you kind of go through the bullet list there with me, you'll see that personalized learning is kind of like taking your research project to the next level. It's giving the kids a lot of ownership because it starts at the top with a topic, much like in the past, you know, you might pick sharks, dinosaurs, volcanoes, or whatever. But now they're going to take that and formulate their own question. It really makes it more personal to them. Gives them a little bit more of a purpose to do their learning. With that, then they have to go through many rigorous steps, such as creating a plan that's going to guide their exploration. During that exploration, they're going to be gathering resources, looking through books and webs, and having primary sources perhaps even come into the classroom to discuss topics in more detail, giving like a hands-on experience there. Along the way, they're going to be documenting their findings, and we've had many different ways that we've established that throughout the building. A lot of it is also technology-rich, which is great, moving the kids into the 21st century learners. They take all that information, they reflect, they're constantly talking, constantly learning, checking in with the teachers, checking in with their peers, and in the end, they synthesize all the information, and the best part is they get to share the information then back with their peers and possibly even show projects and ways that they can take what they learned and now do what with it. So it's a really great activity for the kids. What we've noticed over the, this is an example of one of our digital boards that we created, Ashley Patla, who's going to be presenting soon, created this for us. But it just shows you one of the ways that the students can utilize technology and then gather their information using Chromebooks and all these wonderful applications. Back to the activity, however, we wanted to talk about how we're going to take personalized learning, as you can see it here, and now what are we going to do with it? Over the last couple of years, we've been seeing a little bit of overlap from second grade through fourth grade or through fifth grade, and we don't want to have any like questions repeated over the years or activities teachers might do some in second grade and all of a sudden they might be doing it again in fourth grade. We want to prevent any of that. So creating a scope and sequence will help alleviate that. It'll also help us look at grade appropriate expectations. Second grade teachers might have seen a certain ability, then in fourth grade, students are able to progress and do even more. So we really want to say, what are students doing in second grade, moving into third, moving into fourth, and then moving into fifth grade? The best thing I want to say, though, is that personalized learning offers the students their voice. So they actually own their experience instead of being told what to do. They're the ones exploring what they want to learn.
Thanks, Kathy.
Okay, so to continue our academic goal, like one of the other activities that we're going to be doing is we're going to provide articulation, vertical articulation to our teachers. And I think Deanna and I get the privilege of sitting at our grade level meetings, and we're third grade teachers are talking to third grade teachers, fifth grade teachers are talking to fifth grade teachers. And there's this enriched conversation going on, and they're just passionate people who are curious about the students that they have, but they're also curious about where their students are going to go and where they came from. So we, sitting through these meetings, we were kind of in having the teachers talk to one another, they thought, wouldn't it be great if we could have more time talking across the grade levels? They have this natural curiosity of what are the expectations as my student moves forward? How am I going to make sure that the fourth graders that I have are really prepared for fifth grade? And they also want to know the students they have, where are they coming from? What were some of their strengths? What were some of their areas of growth? What can they do? What needs improvement? So they have this, they want to know, they're curious, they're passionate about what they do. So what we want to do is make sure that we can provide that time for them where they can articulate with one another across the grade levels. This, I think, we believe will really help our academic growth because they're going to learn more from each other because they've got such great resources and backgrounds. So this is something we haven't started yet. We are in the process of it. We're organizing it, and it's in its beginning stages. We're planning what that day will look like, but we're very excited about it because we think it's the teachers are really going to appreciate that time and it's well time spent for them.
Thanks, Una. So goal number two, as I mentioned before, is all about social-emotional growth at Fairview. And the measurable objective here is upon analysis of our fall student survey, the percentage of students who report they always often feel respected, safe, cared for, and included at Fairview will increase by the spring of 2020. We'll talk a little bit more about this survey later because we have never used it before. It's a new initiative for us. Una will give us some background later. But we want to talk about how important character is as we look at our students. So our mission statement as a district is preparing children to learn and succeed in a changing world. And of course that involves academics and we need to prepare them to have the skills that they need to have good careers someday and so forth. But success is also coming in the form of character. And the more that we can help our students to develop good character, the more successful they really will be. So it's really super important for us as a school. I know the staff shares that vision with me that we need to continue to build upon their character as well as their academic skills. So the activities that you'll see here are all related to SEL growth, social emotional learning growth, and character development. One note here, you'll notice there is no percentage here in the goal, and typically we would have a percentage, but since this survey is brand new, we don't have a baseline data yet, so it was hard for us to determine, well, this is how much we want to grow by because we haven't had enough historical data to make good rational decisions about what that goal would be. So for now, we're going to take a survey in the fall, and we hope to see it increase by the spring. So the next several activities relate to the social emotional growth of our students. Amanda.
Good evening. I'll bring this down to my height. Okay, so the first activity in our social emotional learning is actually about clarifying hallway voices and expectations of the students that we have across different interactions in different locations of our school. You guys are at a perfect level zero, which will make sense in just a second. 2 years ago, staff feedback and observations indicated that hallway behavior was an area of growth for Fairview School. And last school year, we clarified expectations for hallway voice levels at an assembly in August. And we're about to show you a slide now that shows you our scale. Students were taught about expected voice levels using a 0 through 4 scale with descriptors for each voice level. Expectations were shared about which voice level is appropriate for before school, during the school day, during the lunch hour, and then after school. All staff used visual cues to use with students as they traveled through the hallways. In an effort to maintain the improvement observed last school year in the hallway, this practice will continue for the 2019-2020 school year. One alteration that we have made so far this year is that we changed the voice levels back to a 0 at 12:45 to ease our students from lunch and recess activities back into a volume which is appropriate for their learning environments. So that's one alteration that we made from last year. At this year's assembly, Dan. So this is our chart as you can see it. You'll see them posted throughout our hallways. And the teachers also have individual numbered placards that we can use when we're walking with our students. If we're in a large crowd, we can hold up the different numbers so the students know what level is appropriate. At this year's assembly, we have already addressed changes that were made to our original voice level schedule and focused on the importance of maintaining our expectations while students are traveling without a teacher in the hallway. In addition, staff will continue to have an increased presence in the hallway throughout the year to monitor students with an emphasis on reinforcing expected behaviors. Based on data gathered at the end of last school year, staff were surveyed about current voice levels at Fairview. And we'll show you the chart again so you can see the hallway expectations, classroom expectations, and you can start to figure out the numbers. But here's the data that we found. Data indicated that the staff perceived the voice level during arrival at school in the morning at a 2.2. So a 2.2, again, to give you an idea, would be about a normal speaking tone all the way up to a loud speaking tone. So 2.2. During a learning time at 1.2, during the lunch hour at 1.6, and during dismissal at 2.6. Our goal is to see these numbers decrease to a 1.0 at arrival in the morning, 0.5 during learning time, 1.0 during the lunch hour, and then 2.0 during dismissal. So we do have some videos to share with you as well. You'll notice we have two videos. In the first video, you'll notice that in the first video, we can hear Mrs. Leffler, who is our music teacher. here with us tonight, by the way. We can hear her teaching in her music class. And this means that the students traveling past her classroom are at a volume to allow her music students to focus on their lesson rather than be distracted by the hallway noise. As you can see, our students know that they can still communicate with other students and staff by waving and smiling while still maintaining their hallway volume expectations. So here you go. And there's the waves.
It's a quiet wave.
Mm-hmm. And again, the next clip will show the students closing out their lunch hour and getting ready to transition into recess. Most of you know the lunchroom can be a fairly chaotic sounding event. We showed this video at one of our slumbies. I was really impressed by the kids' behavior and how quickly they respond. You'll see that they quickly quiet down to a level one when they hear the bell ring, which is what the expectation has been set for. They perform their lunchroom duties of cleaning up at an expected volume of one, which helps the students accomplish their tasks quickly and with less chaos. Makes our transition smoother. Also, it makes sense for any announcements that might need to be made. The students are able to hear things are communicated more clearly.
So as the bell sounds, they get to level zero or to level one.
Mm-hmm.
And that maintains until they start dismissing. So here you'll see Mr. McGovern, they're still at that voice level. Just so it's orderly at the end of the lunch hour, we don't need it to be wild and crazy. And mm-hmm. he just points to the tables and they dismiss and off they go to recess.
And you can even see the students have taken ownership of this too. I was gonna add this in. Anytime we're going through the hallways or if we're lining students up after recess in the morning, other students will now cue each other and they'll do this in line. So the kids are even taking ownership of that, which is nice to see. So thank you.
Thanks, Amanda. Jamie.
Hello. The next activity is check-in and check-out. Check-in and check-out will be piloted as a tier two intervention to support students with social, emotional, and or behavioral needs. A small number of students at each grade level will be identified to participate in this intervention based on an established criteria set by the district. The purpose of this intervention is to provide eligible students with a caring adult with whom they will build a positive relationship to check in with them at the start of the day and review progress toward meeting school-wide expectations at the end of the day. So what is SICO? It's a team-based intervention, research-based, targeted intervention that has been shown to significantly decrease problem behavior and increase academic engagement in students with chronic low-level behaviors that are not dangerous. Check-in and check-out is most effective with students who are reinforced by daily adult attention. And SICO is based on the idea of a daily behavior report card. So what is the rationale for SICO? IDEA has mandated behavioral practices that are proactive and positive. Positive behavior supports is a tiered model designed to support the multiple and varied needs of students with and without disabilities. For students who do not respond well to tier one or universal or primary interventions, schools can select from a range of targeted tier two interventions to prevent the further escalation of problem behavior. And SICO happens to be one of those. Now that we know the rationale, why should we use it? So it's intentional relationship building with an adult other than the child's classroom teacher, offers higher doses of praise to the student. It offers specific corrective feedback and opportunities for student reflection and higher doses of positive adult attention for the student. Additionally, it helps student accountability. It increases structure for the student during his or her day. It improves student behavior and academics when other interventions have failed. Provides feedback and adult support on a daily basis. Improves and establishes daily homeschool communication and collaboration with the parents. Improves student organization, motivation, incentive, and rewards. Helps students to self-monitor and correct, which is very important. Helps students internalize success and accomplishment of goals. And it helps the students get involved and excited about the program, enjoying the structure, support, and incentives of the intervention. So why should a school use it, other than what we've said? So when a student has failed to respond to other interventions in general class management techniques and interventions, maybe when a student is completing little to no work, when a student is not doing homework, when a student is not participating, being involved, or taking part of the learning process, when a student has emotional issues like anxiety, frustration, etc., when kids have attention, focus, or impulsivity issues, when kids have very poor organization, when a student is exhibiting behavioral problems, or when a student is demonstrating low motivation and effort. So how should a school implement it? Check in, check out. So students should check in each morning with a designated coach to develop one or more daily behavioral goals. And the goal of the intervention is the positive interaction and relationship between the student and the coach, not the form or the point sheet. The student then carries a point sheet or goal sheet throughout the day where the teachers provide behavioral feedback regarding the goals. So for instance, rather than saying stop shouting out, the teacher could say remember to raise your hand and wait to be called on before you speak. And so the student returns to the designated coach at the end of the day to receive feedback from the day and to calculate the points earned on his or her point sheet. The coach then provides specific positive and corrective feedback to the student. This gives the student gives a point card to the parent after school, and the student then the parent then signs the student point card for the student to return to the school the next day. So for implementation, a school must decide who the designated people or coaches will be, where will students meet with a designated coach, how will students be monitored, how will the students receive recognition for improvement, what are the resources needed to implement this intervention, such as planning time, funds for reinforcers, and data entry analysis. We must also develop a daily goal sheet or point card to include, which includes the school-wide expectations, which you see here. So we have monitoring intervals that include periods or class activities, rating scales for teachers to use to evaluate during each time period, a place to record total daily points, and a place for teachers to write positive comments. And so here we have be safe, be respectful, and be responsible, with the two meaning met expectations, one, some difficulty with expectations, and zero, did not meet expectations. And of course, some considerations that should that we should keep in mind is, as much as possible, have the same designated coach greet the student each morning and at the end of the day. Use checklists of implementation steps to make sure the program is implemented consistently. Make sure that the SITCO program is a school priority to ensure consistent implementation. Decide how data will be calculated and analyzed, and then watch for students who are losing interest in the program to help them. Thank you.
Thanks, Jerry.
All right, to continue to support our students in that social and emotional growth as well as in their character, we are going to continue to practice embedding very proactive restorative justice practices. And Adam alluded to that in our presentation as a district initiative, and he mentioned it, it's happening in the buildings, and we have it as a priority as on our school improvement plan. So we are, you may be asking, or maybe you did a little refresher, a reminder, exactly what is restorative justice. Restorative justice is a mindset that puts relationships at the center of community life. And we believe that if we build these positive relationships by being very proactive, by embedding some very explicit practices, that we, when harm happens, and unfortunately harm will, that we have these positive relationships and that we can repair them in a healthy manner. So we're trying to get the students to really get a sense of community.
But before we get the children to do that, we want to make sure the staff is very comfortable in doing it as well. So we have, last year, the teachers were introduced to Restorative Justice in a Half-Day Institute, and we started talking about some practices. We did community circles. We talked about creating norms. We also had a few icebreaker games. And so we're continuing to do this at the building level through our committee meetings. And actually, I think we're enjoying it a lot more. I think the teachers are enjoying it, but I know we're getting a lot out of it, too, because we get to know them and make connections and get that stronger bond with one another. So it's really been a great practice. And what we would like to do is, as the teachers get really comfortable with it and we get comfortable with one another, they feel very comfortable doing it in their classrooms. So that's kind of where we're at this year. But before, we'd like to share an activity that we did the very first day of our August Institute. We had asked the staff to send pictures of their childhood, any baby picture, a picture from their childhood, and we asked them to send us three facts that we probably wouldn't know about yourself. So you had to kind of dig down and think, and what might somebody not know about me? So they were coming in all summer long, and Dan and I enjoyed every moment of it. But this is an example of a slide that was presented to our staff. Okay, so the staff would look at it. And as we projected the slide, we read the facts about each person on each side. And the staff were put into teams, and they had to guess who we were talking about. So I'm going to ask you if you can kind of guess who those two people are. Here's the first person. These are the facts. I've been a guest weatherman on the radio 2 times during my high school years. Number 2, I have a donor part. And number 3, I flew in a hot air balloon and helicopter prior to ever traveling in an airplane. Okay, picture number 2. When I was 7 years old, I was in a car commercial. My line was, my dad bought his Bonneville at Howard Pontiac. Second one is, my first concert was Bruce Springsteen at Soldier Field in 1984. And my name is a form of Agnes. So the staff then had to guess who they were. So if you haven't figured it out by now, that's Dan and I. But it was a wonderful, great opening activity. The staff loved it. I think we enjoyed a lot of it, too. But it was just a way for us to make those connections with one another, just to kind of get to know one. We learned so many facts about one another, and it was a great activity. And that's just an example of one of the restorative practices, a little bit of an icebreaker that we're trying to embed in our meetings. We're doing it at the district level, we're doing it in our buildings, and a lot of teachers are doing it into their classrooms already, and we're seeing a lot of positive results with it, so it's been really good.
Okay, and to continue building that sense of a stronger community as a whole school, and connecting to the restorative justice, we have increased the opportunity to intentionally interact with other students outside of homeroom classes. One way we have done this is to create leadership opportunities for the 4th and 5th graders to teach the younger students through buddy classes, lunch leaders, while also providing opportunities for classes to recognize one another. So this picture, you see our shout out board, where classes can recognize other classes for great behavior and learning going on within our building. Students love hearing their classroom announced during morning announcements. It adds a little bit of excitement to the day as it kicks off for the excellent happenings that are occurring. It also provides motivation to earn a shout out and display expected behavior throughout the school day. And then in these pictures, you see tech buddies in action, where the older buddies are teaching the younger buddies foundational tech skills and throughout the whole year, such as Google Doc Toolbar, inserting images, navigating Google Classroom, keyboard shortcuts, and then building their very own presentation. Classrooms are not limited to just tech buddies. Classroom teachers can choose how to implement classroom buddies in their own way. So this could be through reading buddies, writing buddies, or simply just sharing new projects and published work. And then on this slide, you see pictures where you see the most recent classroom buddies initiative, Last week, fourth and fifth graders taught their second and third grade buddies various school expectations. For example, voice level in the hallway, lunchroom procedures, recess expectations, to name just a few. And then teachers facilitated this, but really the fourth and fifth graders really stepped up and became the leaders of these expectations. They had to plan how they were going to teach the rules, and they came up with very creative ways to teach the younger kids. These included digital games, trivia, small group, whole group, and there was even a little bit of dancing and acting.
This is our last activity, so hang in there. We're almost done here. But in an effort to learn more about student perceptions of our school community, we thought, who better to learn that perception from than from the students themselves? So as Dan had mentioned earlier in the presentation, we kind of, through the feedback through BLT and through them reaching out to their grade level counterparts, it was really, we wanted to find a way to hear the students' voice. What were their perceptions? We put a lot of effort into teaching, you know, being safe, being responsible, being respectful. How do they feel about that? So we spent some time creating a survey. And again, you will notice the survey is really based off of our, again, our expectations of being respectful, responsible, safe. And often they're phrased somewhat similar, but we want to know, when they come to Fairview, do they feel respected? Do they feel included? We also want them to think about, are they showing the respect to their classmates? So it's really kind of reflective of, you know, of their perception of how they're perceived, but how are they maybe perceived to others? So we haven't given the survey yet. Directions to teachers are going tomorrow. But one change we made as we made the survey, we presented it to the building leadership team, and they gave us some great feedback about students taking the survey, and especially these second graders who are brand new to Fairview. You know, how would, we've spent a lot of time in the first couple of weeks teaching these expectations, but, you know, are they really going to understand the survey? So we had good conversations about that. And we also had great feedback about adding the emojis to make sure that they understood what always and often and sometimes, and that came from the building leadership team. So it's really a very collaborative group in which we're working back and forth. So the survey really just gives us, it's more aligned to what we do every day and what we're teaching the children every day. Again, it gives us a better idea of student perception, but most importantly, it helps us to establish future goals. Where do we need to go from where we are? We know we're doing good things, but we know that we can do better. And we know, and this kind of gives us the student voice and really helps us make those goals and those plans moving forward.
Thanks, Una. So that does wrap it up. We are really excited about our plan for this year and look forward to what the students are going to do, how they're going to learn and grow both academically and in character. At this time, if you have any questions, we'd be happy to field those.
Well, first I was going to say, great job, great enthusiasm. You seem to be all enjoying and loving what you're doing. Love the emojis. One quick thing, I was going to comment on your 012 last year during special lunch. I noticed a huge difference in second and third grade. I couldn't believe how much quieter they got, and the group was even bigger. I was very impressed. So thanks. I can only imagine it's going to get better.
It is better. And this room makes it better, by the way. But spreading out the noise has also helped.
Does anybody have any comments?
I just had a question with regard to the check-in, check-out initiative. Mm-hmm. I was just curious what that looks like in terms of the time that the individual who's coaching puts in and the student as well. Kind of how does that fit into the schedule for the day?
That's a good question. So the people that serve as coaches had to be selected specifically because they have roles that can be flexible. That's why a classroom teacher couldn't do that, because the beginning and the end of the day for a classroom teacher is chaotic. And in addition, you want someone to be someone else in the school to build that relationship with the child. So we selected people like our building technology assistant, our school nurse, our LRC assistant, our ELL assistant, people that have a bit of flexibility at the beginning and the end of the day. And they're all going to gather in the LRC so that it's all in one location. In case one of them were to be absent on a given day, then one of the other coaches can take over. Because you want it to be consistent, and you want to make sure that you're there for those kids every single day. But then it has much less of an impact on the schedule because of the people you choose to serve as coaches. Any student who qualifies for it can be a part of it at any grade level, but it's very specific in terms of who serves that role.
In terms of the time that the student is spending with that individual.
Sure. So we're going to let them come in a bit early. So at 8:45 is when the bell rings, but school doesn't start till 8:50. So that 5-minute period between 8:45 and 8:50. And if it goes a little bit later, that's okay. They're unpacking and announcements are happening right at the start of the day. So then they can get back and get right into the swing of their day. And then conversely, at the end of the day, 3:15, they'll head down to the LRC so that it's not impacting too much of the academic time, because that's important. Then throughout the day, it's just a check-in quickly, like 30 seconds with the teacher, providing some feedback, because the intervention won't work unless you have good feedback being given to the child about what went well or what, you know, what they could work on. And as Jamie was saying, you want to name what you want to see rather than what you don't want to see, because you frame it in a positive way. This is supposed to be positive and encouraging for them. So we've done some training with the staff at our last staff meeting to kind of coach them through how that's going to look.
And it sounds like the student really takes leadership in terms of what they want for their goal to be.
Yes.
And how much they want to improve.
Right, right. So we have a school-wide goal, which would be 80% in terms of thinking about when to dismiss them off the check-in, check-out plan. But they create it day-to-day based on how they did the last day. So they want it's really motivating in terms of that student ownership piece, yeah.
Sure. Well, I think it sounds like a really interesting and hopeful initiative, and I especially appreciate the intention for it always to be the same person that the student is meeting mm-hmm. with. I'm sure a lot of the students that are in that program probably have some struggles with, making connections, safe connections with adults. And so for it to be that same person that's always there that you can trust that will be supportive for you, I'm sure is really helpful.
Yeah, definitely. And the nice thing is this is district wide. So this is, we put it on our plan because we wanted to emphasize it with our staff, and our school improvement plan is the driving force for our staff in terms of new initiatives. So we wanted it on here, but the same thing is happening at all four district schools.
Thank you.
Yeah, thank you so much for your amazing presentation. I had three quick things. The first is that I remember that the last time you presented, you talked about, not just about what you wanted to, you talked about not just, it's important not to know like what you're learning, but why you're learning it, and then how you will know that you've learned it. And then you actually modeled it in your presentation, and it was mind blowing. And then the fact that you did it again this year tells me that, you're not just doing it at the board meetings, but you must be doing it, at the school day in, day out. And I just love that you're doing it. It was so, I feel like it's ingenious. Yeah, it's not just about what you're learning, but to know why it's important and to know like how you know that you've learned it. I just love that you did this again. It just reminded me how it was amazing when you gave your, this was amazing too.
Thanks.
But to hear it for the first time was amazing. The second thing is I remember, so the personalized learning, when you first talked about it, At that time, it was just a pilot program.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm not sure if it was because it was a pilot program, or you also mentioned that you wanted to encourage learning for the sake of learning, but those projects were not graded back then. And
right.
So I was curious, are they graded now?
No, it's still something that is, it's meant to be learning for the sake of learning,
yeah.
Continues to be that. And that's really where the motivation for students comes in, if they know that it can become laborious if it's because of you're going to get... The incentive shouldn't be a letter on a paper. It should
yeah.
be that they've learned.
And
that's still the same for
yeah.
us now. Yeah.
And I could see how that encourages students also to choose maybe a challenging topic or something risky, because they don't have to worry about getting a safe, grader. Yeah.
yeah.
And then my last thing is I love that you chose to, for your goal too, that you chose to focus on this, that the percentage of students who report that they are, always often feel respected, safe, cared for, and included will increase. And I love it for so many reasons, but one thing that really stood out to me is so many times we focus on reducing a negative behavior. And not that that's wrong, but I love that you chose this behavior that you want to increase. Yeah.
Thanks.
I love it.
Thanks. And I will say, Vicki, back to that teacher clarity too. That was a school improvement goal where teachers were really focused on what am I learning, why am I learning it, how do I know I've learned it. And so Una and I, we would tabulate data on our teacher observations, and we set a goal for ourselves that 70% by the end would be doing that on a regular basis, and we achieved that goal. And we didn't report out on previous plans, but it's no longer on our plan because the staff is doing that. And so it's been really neat to watch. And then thank you for your comments about the second goal. I appreciate that.
Anybody else? Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Thank you. Next up, we have the enrollment study.
Good evening. It's time for our annual enrollment study. I'll go over what the data showed this year. Our enrollment this year is 2,230, essentially flat from last year, which is good. I projected a few more last year when I did this. I love it when I'm wrong and wrong in the right direction. Our kindergarten enrollment is 198. I take a 20-year average, a 10-year average, and a 5-year average to come up with the starting for the projection model. So we're still keeping it at 198. Seems to be a good number for us. We've had just that 1 year of 232 that was really showing to be an outlier. This shows our 5-year projection model, looking at next year being at 2,242, going up to 2,271, going up to 22, going down then to 2,269, down again to 2,262, and up at 2,276. It's a 5-year projection model. I'm confident in the first year of projections. I'm slightly less confident in the second year of projections. And years 3, 4, and 5, the data is so soft, I just wouldn't bet anything on it. So, but we do it just for the sake of doing it and getting us an idea. This graph just shows the projection with the projections out for the next 5 years. And some data, some summary findings. The most recent 5 years of data show a steady enrollment increase, but stabilizing next year. And the overall 5-year projections indicate a slight stable increase in enrollment for the next 2 years, and an overall increase of approximately 46 students by the year 24-25. And again, those are soft numbers. Space concerns at Fairview have been alleviated. Thank you, Board. Lyons Park projections do not show a concern for space at this time. Lyons Park enrollment is projected for 2021 to need 21 sections, ranging in numbers from 23 to 25 students per section. It has a capacity for 23 sections. There are 2 classrooms that could be repurposed if space becomes a necessity. It would include some movement of some current classrooms, but we could repurpose 2 classrooms if we needed them. And administration does not recommend expanding the building of Lyons Park for summer of 2020. That will be discussed further at the October 17th board meeting. Lincoln will continue to be very full, but should have adequate space for the next 3 years. And as Adam mentioned earlier, because of the switching of classrooms, you do have the ability to utilize a classroom for more than one purpose. So it's called doubling up of classrooms. Our free and reduced lunch data and fee waivers remain consistent. We continue to experience a steady influx of new students transferring into the district while a slight lesser number transfer out. Many of the students who move into the district come from multilingual homes. That keeps us on our toes monitoring our EL staffing. And all of our new students will be assessed to garner valuable information for program placement and social assimilation. And that is the annual enrollment study. Do you have any questions?
What was the speed enrollment study? Anybody have any questions?
I actually looked back at some of the data from back around referendum time, and I was actually pleasantly surprised. It seems like we're really close on the projections to
it's a good
back
model.
At that time.
It's based on 5-year averages.
Yeah, so it's holding really well. So it's good to see that what we planned for is actually in line with what we're seeing, and so makes you feel better about going forward and what the needs are. So
good. It's good. Thanks.
Anybody else? Thank you very much. Oh, wait, Rachel.
Elaine, I know that there were some community concerns about possible increase in students due to development in the downtown mm-hmm. area. Do these projections include those numbers
no,
for the new development?
No, it does not include their projection model.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you very much. Okay, next up, we have our IAR, Illinois Assessment of Readiness.
Are you sitting or going there?
I'll sit.
good evening. I figured I would also include a brief update on the Illinois Science Assessment as well. So tonight we'll be spending more time about the Illinois Assessment of Readiness, or what we've referred to as IAR, because we're educators and we have to have acronyms for everything. And also then, of course, our science assessment. Just keep in mind this is data from students from last school year. So we're going to be talking about from the 18-19 school year. And our connection to our strategic plan is key success factor number one, outstanding student performance. And how fitting to report this on an evening where we were all educated by one of our school's school improvement plans, which just so perfectly illustrates how we are committed to whole child education. And so I want to frame tonight's report, and there's a really positive achievement to celebrate, but it's important for us to just always have that context that kids are complex and unique, and that these are scores on a test that does not reflect who they are and how we conceptualize our mission as educators in this district. All right, so here's a little background about the IAR. This was previously referred to in our state as the PARC assessment, and this pretty much changed in its title, but the actual test itself didn't change much from what children encountered. And this was taken by students beginning in grades 3rd through 8th in our district. And the focus of this test is to assess students' performance on English language arts and literacy and mathematics standards. We hear a lot in our field about college and career readiness, that we want to have really robust alignment as students are leaving grade levels and going to the next, all the way up through college. We don't want to have children graduating from high school and not being ready to go into college and perform well or enter into a career at that point. So this really has trickle-down effect for us at the elementary districts, because it really starts in pre-K and making sure there is that vertical alignment across grade levels. So great job, Fairview, for being strategic in that. And so all of our Illinois learning standards are aligned to the Common Core. So just some ways of understanding, and those of you who are parents of District 57 students, or any students in the state of Illinois for that matter, you'll soon be receiving your child's reports then later in October. And so you'll also have some more information about how to analyze your child's scores. But tonight we're going to be using this key, very aesthetically pleasing, with some different shades of blue. In this case, we want to go for the navy blue. We want to stay away from that light blue. Navy would be reflecting of exceeding expectations, and as you get lighter, you're going down to did not yet meet. And then just another key that will make more sense in a moment. Whenever you see the down red, that is did not yet meet or partially met expectations. The blue sideways is approaching expectations, but not quite there yet. And then the green up is met or exceeded expectations. So from an achievement standpoint, certainly as a district, we're wanting our students, as many students as possible, to constantly, you know, moving more towards that meeting expectations or, of course, exceeding expectations. Here are the subclaim categories that are featured in the IAR. You can see within the reading test, there are test items focusing on literary, information and vocabulary skills, in writing, expression and conventions, and in mathematics, there's different categories, the major content, supporting content, reasoning, and modeling. Each of those has different types of standards that they're assessing and performing. All right, so first I'm going to give you just a cross-section of grade-level performance, and then in some of the slides that will come next, I'll break that down by grade level. So we're just going to zoom into grades 3, 5, and 8. So first, let's take a look at grades 3 performance in the area of English language arts. You can see that our students did much better compared to the third graders in the state of Illinois last year in their performance. Average overall score for ELA in our district was 742. In the state, that was 734, which was wonderful. Then you can see further if you look into the different categories. I'll break that down more at the granular level. Fifth grade, we continue on the trend, and the average score is 54. The state's average score was 46. You can notice, too, as you look into the different components, you can see that our students tended to do very well on the analysis of literary texts, and then for writing, for written expression, was a strong suit for our district's fifth graders last year. And in eighth grade, once again, we are outperforming the state average. Students at Lincoln in eighth grade did well in vocabulary, comparatively, and then in writing conventions. So the good news is that you, like, when you take cross sections of performance, you want to start pulling out themes. And if we were to see certain areas that across third, fifth, and eighth, we were seeing issues, then that would be indications to us that we would want to really explore how our curriculum might be contributing to that issue. In this case, our analysis would suggest that, you know, kids are first doing really well by comparison to their state peers, but also that we don't see any glaring areas that don't work themselves out throughout the grade levels, which is good. All right, we will do the same for math. And starting in third grade, you can see that we outperformed the state average with our students' average overall score being 754, the state 739. But then it's always more informative to look over and see the performance in the four different areas. In this case, reasoning for third graders was where they performed best. In grade five, you can see we once again outperformed the state average, and they did the best in modeling problems. And then in grade eight, we outperformed the state average again on this assessment, and the reasoning was the highest for this grade level. All right, now let's look and see a little bit deeper into the data. And you can see this is for the English language arts performance. The light blue in this case is going to be students that didn't quite meet the standards, but they're approaching. And then the darker blue would be students who either met or exceeded the standards. Now we want to look at our performance compared to the state performance. As you can see, when you look across third, fourth, and fifth grade in terms of their performance on this assessment, what's promising to see is that you see our bar graph going up and to the right, which suggests that, you know, as the grade levels increased, students, we had more students at the meeting or exceeds. And in all cases, it was higher than the state average in both areas. Looking at middle school performance, you can see that trend as well. A little less variation in the amount of students who were meeting and exceeding, but in all cases, at all grade levels, higher than the state average, and in some places, considerably higher. Now we'll look at math. The trend continues of outperforming the state averages, and also we don't see anything in this data that would suggest any glaring issues, although it is to note that in third grade, they had the highest percentage of students who met or exceeded the standards. And here is the middle school math data. Again, very impressive scores. The grade level that had the highest number of children in the meter exceeds category would be seventh grade in this case. So before we go on to science, I can pause if there are questions that you may have about that. I know that was a pretty quick review. So if anyone has any questions?
Anyone have questions? Go ahead, Jerry.
Not specific to the actual data from this year, but thinking about the change in the Lincoln structure of the classes, and I don't know if you think this is a fair comparison or not, but to look back at the eighth grade cohorts over time just to see or you know, even 7th and 8th grade, because I think we're just getting through, is it the first group that's actually been through 3 years of the new 8th graders? Would be the first group. So just to see if they're, if we're seeing any trend in terms of them, you know, more getting to that equal exceed in mm-hmm. mathematics.
So we always would look at historical performance just to, that would be something that would be pretty typical. And in this case as well, though it's not part of this presentation formally, but informally it is occurring. And I know that the administrators and as well as the teachers at Lincoln do that as well as regular practice. But I would say that in general, the trend is higher performance. I wouldn't say that in this assessment I'd be comfortable saying that we have, you know, tremendous evidence that this is, you know, the only way that we would evaluate that that has resulted in significantly different performance. I think part of that is because we're a high-performing district and kids tend to do really well by most standards. And so, yes, I think generally, yes, it's increasing, but I wouldn't say anything I encountered in my review was significant enough to say, wow, that must be the result of that, you know. I know Paul Siminski did present very promising indications that he has evidence that things are going well in the performance and looking at a variety of different performance indicators for achievement for math. But without going, you know, really narrowly with that question of longitudinal performance on state assessments, I wouldn't feel comfortable saying, yeah.
Good to go ahead.
Okay. All right, so next we'll just briefly look at the performance for our 5th and 8th graders on the Illinois Science Assessment, which is aligned to next generation science standards, and also in Illinois we have those as our Illinois Learning Standards for Science. And this is an interesting assessment that only assesses students in 5th grade, 8th grade, and 11th grade, as if 11th grade in high school isn't the hardest already. So this is actually really exciting data to consider. It was exciting to see the performance of our fifth graders significantly higher than the state average in their proficiency, and in eighth grade as well. And I think district-wide, we're very proud of the curriculum that has been in place in this district for many years, and as a board, I think you should feel comfortable knowing that, you know, we use FOSS curriculum, and that's a very renowned inquiry-based curriculum. It's pretty expensive. It requires a lot of commitment from a district level because there's so much material, and yet I think that this data suggests that we were prolific in the adoption of a curriculum like that many years ago, because kids in this district are interacting with science in a really significant and genuine way that's reflected in their performance. I think when you have a less hands-on curriculum, you really aren't going to be able to produce these types of outcomes with students on assessments like this. And so, next steps, as I mentioned, parents will be receiving their child's reports home as in addition to MAP scores later this fall. At the district and building levels, we're going to be engaging in team analysis and the review of this data to both inform our instructional planning and also really make connections between areas that might present as gaps that we want to look more closely at, and triangulate data to really inform next steps. As an administrative team, this is really important data for us to consider, and always making sure that all decisions are motivated by making powerful decisions on behalf of students. Thank you.
Thank you. Anybody else have? One quick question. The IAR, are we going to be doing that assessment in the spring also?
Okay. We are, yes.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Superintendent report?
Yes, just a couple of things to cover. Annually, there are two compensation and salary reports that have to be presented to the Board of Education before they are posted on the district's website. Both of those reports are included in your board packet. Also included in your board packet was a copy of the communications plan that's devised with Jenny Quinn, just to give you an idea. We present all of our plans that make up our strategic plan, so I wanted to include this one as well. And finally, there is a new law that was passed, the Child Abuse and Neglected Child Reporting Act. This is a new law that's required of all board members to go through a training on child abuse. I've included in your packet, you will receive an email tomorrow from the company that we engage with.
Safe Schools.
Safe Schools, thank you. To show you how to log in to take the training online. It takes about 20 minutes, and once you've completed it, we will have notification back here at the district. So if you would please find 20 minutes to take care of that for us, we would appreciate it. Okay. That's it.
Okay, next up will be our consent agenda. For the first item, Jen, you were not here for the August 22nd open-closed. Okay. So if I could just get a motion for consent. Oh, is there anybody who wants to pull or talk about anything on the consent agenda? And Vicki, I believe you did the bills?
Yes.
And everything? Okay. And then, so if I get someone to pull one to get a motion on one.
Motion to approve the minutes of the following Board of Ed meetings, the regular business meeting from August 22nd, 2019, open and closed sessions.
Second.
Vice President Chung?
Yes.
Member Fay?
Yes.
Member Kobus? Member May?
Yes.
Member McCluskey?
Yes.
Member Rochock?
Yes.
President Kowalczyk?
Yes. Okay, if I can get a motion then for consent agenda items 2, 3, and 4.
Move to approve personnel transactions, including approval of the employment of 8 ESP individuals, approval of change in status for 1 ESP employee, and accept the resignation of 4 ESP employees, as well as the financial reports from August of 2019 and the accounts payable bills.
Second.
Member Fay?
Yes.
Member Kobus?
Yes.
Member May?
Yes.
Member McCluskey?
Yes.
Member Rochock?
Yes.
Vice President Chung?
Yes.
President Kowalczyk?
Yes. Okay, now our unfinished business is to approve the official budget for fiscal year 20. I want to thank Adam again for his presentation earlier and for our balanced budget. We appreciate that. And did anybody have any community comments before we go through with that? And did anybody have any questions, Brian, that you weren't here for that portion? Did you have any questions about the budget at all?
No.
Okay. All right, then if I can get a motion to approve the official budget, fiscal year 20.
Motion to approve the official fiscal year 2020 budget.
Second.
Member Kobus?
Yes.
Member May?
Yes.
Member McCluskey?
Yes.
Member Rochock?
Yes.
Vice President Chung?
Yes.
Member Fay?
Yes.
President Kowalczyk?
Yes. Okay. Now, are there any community comments? No? Okay. Thank you. All right. Okay, for new business, we have a first read of the following Board of Education policies. Do we have to actually go through each? Okay, good. Does anybody have any questions about any of the policies? I'm myself on the policy committee with Jen. We went over this stuff and approved what is before you if you have any questions. No? All right. So at the next board meeting on October 17th, we will approve these policies. All right. Onward. Any board discussion? There is no board discussion tonight, so we're all good on that. And then
Did you want to circle back to the community forum issue that Jen had brought up?
All right, fine. All right. All right. Let us go on back to our community engagement. I guess we can toss it in there, because otherwise it's not till October. When does the community survey go out? Early October. And how long do we have for it to come back? 3 weeks. No, we will. We just haven't discussed what topics we've, you know, for community engagement.
You might wait until we get the results from the community survey. That might trigger a topic for you to have a community engagement topic about.
So wait for that to come back. We can talk about that as community engagement. So we'll wait for the results of that survey.
It'll be presented by Bill Foster from School Perceptions at the December board meeting.
Okay, and then we could do something in the spring.
Okay,
sounds good. All right, and now we are done with our new board discussion. Unless anybody else want to talk about community engagement. No, good, okay. All right, we do have need for closed session for collective negotiating matters between the public body and employees or their representatives or deliberations concerning salary schedules for one or more classes of employees. Board action may or may not take place following closed session. So if I can get a motion to adjourn into closed session.
Move to adjourn.
Second.
Member May?
Yes.
Member McCluskey?
Yes.
Member Rotroff?
Yes.
Vice President Chung?
Yes.
Member Fay?
Yes.
Member Kobus?
Yes.
President Kowalczyk?
Yes. Thank you, everybody.